Brilliant. Great to be with you all. Yes, my name's Glenn, and this is Jamie. And Jamie, tell us, what have you been up to just today?
So this morning I was working. I took a half day today, but this morning I was working. And I work as a drug discovery scientist for a pharmaceutical company.
Okay. And you're trying to discover drugs that will help people, cure people, that sort of thing?
Yeah, that's it. So I'm involved in drug design, so trying to design new drugs to treat diseases like epilepsy and arthritis and asthma and things like that.
Okay. Epilepsy, arthritis, asthma. Is there a common denominator between those? Why those particular diseases?
Well, those happen to be the diseases that my company is quite interested in curing, but I work on all of them because I actually work on the aspects of the drugs to do with the drug being absorbed into your body, moved around, metabolized and broken down and got rid of. So I work in designing drugs that have good properties in all those things and make sure that they're safe and that you can take them safely.
And you've been kind of into pharmacology, I guess, right from undergraduate level? Is that sort of...
Yeah, that's right. So my my undergrad was pharmacology, and then I did a PhD in drug metabolism and pharmacokinetics.
Okay, so what's the dream? What would you love to be able to do in 10 years' time? You've discovered the cure for what?
I mean, that's a great question. I think if I could cure any disease, well, the biggest killer, I think, worldwide at the moment is heart disease. So that would be a great one. Hmm. But actually, I think I would really love to find a cure for malaria. Hmm. I think it's big uncertainty around this, but some people estimate that half of the people that have ever lived have died of malaria.
Wow.
And so I would really love to knock that one on the head and kill that one.
Yes. Anyone else want Jamie to do that for us? Yes. Okay, let's. Off you go. There's your job. You've got 10 years. Go. What a cool job. What a cool job. And so, as a scientist and professionally working in that kind of field, you're pretty upfront about your faith, pretty upfront about being a Christian in the workplace.
Yeah, I think everyone that I work with knows that I'm a Christian. Okay. And I know of a few other Christians that I work with as well.
Okay. And how is that received generally? People don't care? People do care? What's...
I think people are very polite. I think people tend not to kind of poke fun at me or anything like that. They're very respectful and very polite. But I think generally the attitude tends to be along the lines of, well, that's great for you, but, you know, probably not for me.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll push into that in a little bit, but let's hit rewind and go back to your childhood. And I guess some of your childhood was a little bit closer to where I grew up than where some of the people here would have grown up, because you spent quite a lot of time in Papua New Guinea. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So when I was 4 years old, my father got a job teaching in a university in Papua New Guinea. So we moved out there. And so I lived there from the age I was 4 until the age I was 11. Mm-hmm. So all my primary school years was in Papua New Guinea.
Wow.
Which is quite different. I mean, it's a third world country. So it was a very kind of simple childhood, I guess. We didn't have a TV or anything like that until I came back to the UK. But we had all kinds of things like beautiful beaches and coral reefs and rainforests and birds of paradise and all these kinds of things that I just thought that was normal. I thought everyone in the world had those things.
Yes.
But maybe I didn't realize until we came back to the UK. But no, it was a really good childhood.
Yeah. And then aged 11, your dad comes back to the UK, you move to Cheshire, and then you really do come back with a bump, because what happened then?
So we just moved back to the UK, and we moved to Cheshire, as you say, and we'd been there about a week, and my father died of a heart attack. It was pretty tough on me and my sister, for sure. But I think it was especially tough on my mum, because she didn't know anyone. She hadn't even met the neighbours. She had no friends, no support at all where she was. And she suddenly had to go out and get a job to support her two kids. And she had an 11-year-old and a 13-year-old who were fast approaching the teenage years. And she basically just had to work through that and support us. And at the same time as getting over my dad's death. And basically, she's my all-time hero, I think, my mum.
Yeah, she sounds amazing. And she was a Christian, and your dad was a Christian as well?
Yeah, so both my parents were Christian, and yeah, my mom is still a faithful Christian today. So I grew up in a household where we went to church every Sunday, and that was true in Papua New Guinea, and it was true in Cheshire as well during my teenage years. My mom still took me down to church every week.
Okay, and how does faith help an 11-year-old kid who's lost his dad? Is that something you thought about from a Christian perspective?
I don't think I ever really thought it through from a Christian perspective. I think, I mean, when I was 11 years old, I didn't really have a proper faith, I would say. I kind of knew some stuff about the Bible, and I knew some stuff that my parents had told me, but that didn't really help me to kind of process things or anything like that. In one sense, it didn't really support me in that sense. And to be honest, during my teenage years, I mean, although I kind of knew a lot of Christian stuff, I wouldn't say I had any kind of meaningful faith of my own.
Yeah.
And that was mainly because what I saw of Christianity, maybe in the church that we went to and stuff like that, was that the way it was talked about was very much kind of, well, this is my kind of thought about it, and that's your thought about it, and this is my feeling, and that's your feeling. And it was all very fuzzy. It was all very subjective. And the way I'm hardwired, and probably the reason I ended up becoming a scientist, is that I love absolute truth. And I'm a truth seeker, and I love objectivity. And I really didn't like the whole subjectivity that I thought that Christianity was all about. And so that was really kind of a blocker for me. I never really got to grips with that, and I never really embraced it.
So for you, there's truth, and that can be discovered in the lab and through your studies. There's Christianity that's over here that doesn't really have anything to do with truth, and if it's a choice between the two, you'll go with the science stuff. Is that the sort
of thing? Absolutely. I mean, I kind of thought, well, it wasn't so much that. It was more that if there was some truth out there, well, these guys clearly didn't know what it was any more than I did, because they were just saying maybe what came into their head, what their thoughts were, and this guy is saying what his thoughts are. I mean, why do they know any better than I do? I mean, why should I listen to those guys? Why should I waste my Sunday mornings going down to church when I could be doing something else and I can just figure it out myself?
Yeah, okay. So what kind of kid were you? Were you a very inquisitive kid, kind of taking things apart, putting them back together, that sort of thing?
Well, I certainly asked a lot of questions. I think all kids ask questions. I asked a huge number of questions. My dad, I think, really kind of got me interested in science in a kind of weird way. I remember him doing my first ever science experiment with me. We were sitting at the dining room table, and there was a couple of glass bottles. And he said to me, "Jamie, which one do you think is the big one? Which one would hold more water?" And I looked at the two, and I pointed to the taller one. I said, "That one." He said, "Are you sure?" I said, "Yeah, definitely, it's taller." He was like, "Well, let's find out." So he brought me into the kitchen, brought the bottles, and we filled the taller one with water, and we poured it into the shorter one, and it didn't fill it all the way up. Now, of course, it was much fatter, and so it had a bigger volume. And I was like, "Wow, that's amazing. We can test." It blew my mind. I think I was 6 years old. Blew my mind. That was the first scientific experiment I'd ever done.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is amazing. You can investigate the world around you.
Yes.
You can find out what's true and what's not. And so my dad kind of put that way of thinking into my head. And then my mum suffered with a huge barrage of questions that then followed. So I was always asking questions about everything.
Okay.
And yeah, my mum put up with a lot of that at bedtime.
Okay. And I'm sure that kind of reflected on your sort of subject choices, GCSEs, A-levels. What kind of A-levels did you do?
So I did maths, physics, and chemistry. So anything where I didn't have to write an essay, that was what I was after.
Right. Okay. Maths, physics, and chemistry. Okay. And then off to, where did you go to university undergraduate?
I was an undergrad in Sheffield. And then I went and did my PhD in Manchester.
Okay. So if I parachuted into your life aged 18 and I said, "All right, Jamie, who is Jesus to you right now? You've just left home. You've got the wind in your hair. You're free. You can do whatever you want. What are you thinking about faith? What are you thinking about Jesus at that point?"
I knew some stuff about what the Bible said about Jesus. I knew some stuff about what my mum had said about him. I knew what other people said about him is what I knew about him.
Mm.
So I knew that people said that he was the Son of God. I knew that he was like a significant bloke. And I knew that there were rules that he gave us and stuff like that. And these are the kind of things that I knew about. I wouldn't say that I knew him in any way for myself. I didn't have any kind of a relationship with him, if you like.
Mm.
It was more I kind of knew about him.
Yeah.
In that way.
Yeah.
So in a sense, he didn't really have any meaningful impact on my life because he wasn't useful to me in any way.
Yeah.
It was just a guy who some people have said stuff about, but had no actual relevance to my life because there was no absolute truth there. So it was all just a bit fluffy and fuzzy, and it was something that I could very easily just leave behind.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did, basically. Yeah. So when I went to university, I just completely left that behind. I thought, well, I can basically figure out everything on my own. Mm-hmm. Why do I need that?
Yeah.
So that was the end. I never went to church, basically, after that. And I just, you know, I lived the complete student life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At Sheffield, and then, is it doctorate at Manchester? Your PhD there. And then you moved to Cambridge to work?
Yeah, so I got a job for a drug company in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so I moved down there from Manchester. Mm-hmm. And started work.
Okay, and so 9 years after having left home and having left church behind, somewhere out of the blue, you figure it would be a good idea to go to church. Why did you think that?
Yeah, so my mother had been to a Christian conference, and she had heard a guy speak from a church in Cambridge. And she just said to me, she knew I'd just moved to Cambridge, and she said, Jamie, there was this guy, he spoke really well, he was from this particular church in Cambridge, why don't you go down there and just check it out?
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I had just moved to Cambridge, so I didn't know anyone. And I had nothing to do that weekend. And so it was out of boredom and loneliness,
mm-hmm,
that I thought, well, I have it nothing couldn't be worse better. I have yeah, nothing yeah. better to do. And so I wandered down there. I thought, you know what, worst case scenario, I meet a couple of people.
Yes.
And, you know, churches aren't too bad a place. So that was it. So I wandered in there.
Okay. And what did you encounter when you went?
Well, I encountered something very different to my previous experience of all things Christian, mm-hmm, and everything to do with church.
Hmm.
What I encountered there was that when they opened the Bible, they treated it as though it was true.
Mm-hmm.
As though it was actually absolute truth. I mean, this is funny to me thinking about now, but they actually treated it as though it was true. And they preached as though it was true.
Mm-hmm.
As though there was absolute truth in the text. As though it was a historical document, mm-hmm, that was true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, now I know that it is true, that it is absolutely one of the most amazing historical documents ever written,
mm,
and that it contains absolute truth, a wonderful absolute truth. And I guess it never occurred to me up until that point that that could possibly be the case.
Mm.
And yet here I saw it actually handled in that way and, mm, preached in that way, and it blew my mind. And as soon as I started to come to terms with the idea that the Bible might actually be true, that there might be absolute truth in there, well, for the first time in my life, I could take it seriously.
Yeah.
And then it really engaged with me, and, mm, it blew me away.
Amazing. And at this stage, what is it that's kind of falling into place, both intellectually and at a heart level? What is it that's changing as you encounter this sort of robust Christianity?
Well, the thing that's changing is that I guess up until that point, I'd very much kind of thought, okay, well, I can figure out all this stuff on my own.
Mm.
But actually, over the course of the time, basically from the time I'd gone to university through to the age of 27, and that's basically what I've been doing, to be honest, when I look back over that time period, it hadn't gone that well.
Mm.
And I kind of thought, you know what, this isn't working.
Mm.
I kind of thought, you know, I'm not that stupid. I can figure stuff out, and I could usually figure most stuff out, but I can't seem to figure this out. I can't figure out life.
Your life.
I can't figure out my life.
Mm.
I can't figure out what's the point of everything? I can't figure out the meaning of life. None of this stuff, there weren't any answers to that I could just look inside myself and find. And as I started to actually encounter Jesus, as I found him in the Bible and it was preached to me, I started to see that truth that made sense of everything that I'd basically been looking for a long time.
Amazing. And as you're sort of either coming back to a childhood faith or rediscovering a faith that you never kind of had to begin with, but as you're taking Christianity seriously, was it a struggle for you to think, come on, I'm a scientist, I can't buy into this Christianity nonsense? Was it ever a struggle for you personally to think that Christianity and science don't mix? Was that a thought that you had?
You know, that never occurred to me. That was never a struggle for me personally. I know it is for a lot of people, but it really wasn't for me. I never saw a conflict between science and Christianity. I never saw it. I still don't see it. Now, it's actually been very interesting to me over the more recent years when actually there's been a lot of this on the news, and I've really enjoyed kind of listening to the debate between guys like Richard Dawkins and John Lennox and other guys like this. And it's really fascinating to hear some of the exchanges, and it's really interesting to hear some of the conflicts that people perceive. But I have to say, for me personally, it's never particularly been a challenge.
So, but let's say that it is for someone in your workplace, for instance, and they're interested and they want to ask you a question. You know, what if they say to you, look, it's lovely, Jamie, you've got your faith, I've got my science. What do you say to that kind of sort of bifurcation of faith on the one side and evidence, truth, science on the other side? What do you say to that?
Yeah, I think that's quite a common one, actually. And I think what that boils down to, really, is a misunderstanding of what faith is.
Yeah.
See, I think there's a perception that faith is what you do when there's no evidence. That basically you just kind of close your eyes and believe. Or maybe even in the face of evidence to the contrary.
Right, yeah.
So you just kind of shut your eyes and kind of shut out reason and just believe, and that's what faith is. But, of course, that's not what faith is. And when we talk about Christian faith, that's absolutely not what faith is. See, faith is acting out on what you know to be true from evidence. So the two go hand in hand. Now, Christians have faith for sure, but it's based on evidence. Scientists have evidence, but they also need faith.
Explain that. In what sense?
So as a scientist, every time you go into the lab, you exhibit faith. So every time I use my instrument, I'm trusting that what it tells me is true. That actually the measurement it's making and the result that it's giving me on the screen is right. Now, I have good evidence to suggest that that should be the case because I've done lots of tests and I've shown that this instrument is reliable and that it's... But ultimately, at some point, I have to exhibit faith by using it.
Yes.
And that's all faith is. It's not an absence of evidence. It's not against evidence. It's what you do with the evidence. It's acting on it.
Yes, yeah.
And that's what we do as Christians. We have huge evidence for Jesus and who he is. And all faith is then putting that into action and living a life in response to that.
Yes. So what are some of the other questions that people sort of ask you as a scientist? I mean, somebody might come to you and they'll say, you can't believe the book of Genesis, for instance, can you? As a scientist, it's this pre-scientific document. What are we meant to do with that today, even if you are a Christian? What do you do with those sorts of questions?
So I think it's probably important to say that different Christians, all Bible-believing Christians, have different takes when it comes to Genesis, and that's absolutely great. But I think, to be honest, when it comes to this, I think the important thing for me is to remember that Genesis isn't a science textbook, and so we shouldn't treat it as one. It's not there for God to tell me what electron orbitals are like, or you know, a DNA double helix and how that works, or it doesn't tell me any of that stuff, and that it was never intended to tell me any of that stuff. What it does tell me, it tells me who created me. It tells me a lot about God and his character. It tells me about why he created me and my place in the universe and my relationship to him. So it tells me all these things that a scientific textbook, and in fact science, could never tell me.
Mm-hmm. It's not set up to answer those questions.
It's absolutely not set up to answer scientific questions. It's set up to answer completely different questions about the nature of God, the nature of humanity, and our relationship with God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what Genesis is all about, and it has wonderful truth that it can tell us about that. Mm. If I want scientific answers, well, I get in the lab and I do some science.
Yes, yeah. So we're very much saying faith and science are friends, not foes. But there is a clash, isn't there? There's something that's going on when Richard Dawkins gets very angry. And there's something that's going on when some Christian answers him angrily. What is that clash? Because it's not between science and Christianity, but there is a clash going on. So what is that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's obvious to everyone, isn't it, that there is a conflict going on. We wouldn't have all these televised debates and all that kind of stuff if there wasn't a disagreement. But that disagreement is actually, I think, not between science and Christianity, because there's huge numbers of Christian scientists, way more esteemed than I am. I mean, you know, Isaac Newton was a Christian. There's countless Nobel Prize winners who are all Christians. Mm. So it's not a conflict between Christianity and science, but actually it's a conflict between two different worldviews. Mm. One of them is Christianity and this theistic worldview.
And theistic, the other, meaning a belief
theistic,
in God.
A belief in a God.
Yeah.
And the other one is a reductionist worldview. Mm-hmm. This idea that the whole universe, everything, can just be reduced down to biology, chemistry, physics. Everything is reducible down to atoms.
And nothing more.
So it's a completely bottom-up approach as opposed to a kind of a theistic top-down approach.
Yes. And so the clash comes when you want to say that the scientific method and materialism as a methodology is your only source of truth in this world. Yeah, is that...
That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not very difficult to see that that cannot be true.
Okay.
You know, biology, chemistry and physics can tell me nothing about what's right and wrong.
Ethics
and morality, it has absolutely no way of being able to say.
Yeah.
It can tell me about physical processes in the physical universe, and it's wonderful at doing that as far as the universe is reducible. Mm. But where the universe is not reducible, and there's many areas where the universe is not reducible, science, unfortunately, has no power to give us any truth at all.
Yes. Yes. So things like goodness, moral goodness, things like beauty as well.
Beauty. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. All kinds of things. Even history. We can't test history scientifically. Mm. We have to use completely different methods to do that.
You can't put the Battle of Waterloo into a test tube and... Well, you can't repeat it.
We can't repeat it. Yeah. In science, you do experiments and you repeat them and you can test and retest.
Yes.
But of course, with history, you can't do that.
Yes. And yet, there is such a thing as historical truth, even though it is investigated in a different way to investigating scientific truth.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do sometimes encounter the notion that one day science will tell us everything. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, for me, so obviously isn't true. Mm. It can tell us a lot of stuff. Mm. And it will tell us much more stuff than we know now. Mm-hmm. But it will only tell us stuff about the physical, reducible universe. Mm-hmm. And it won't tell us anything beyond that. And there is a huge amount beyond that.
Yes. And I guess one thing that sort of occurs to me, as you were, you know, talking about, you would love to cure heart disease and you would love to cure malaria. And I guess as a pharmacologist, and as someone wanting to heal and bless and better the world, just chemicals doesn't explain that human desire to bless other people.
Now, this is something quite close to my heart, because actually the UCB kind of company motto includes the line, inspired by patience, driven by science.
Okay.
Inspired by patience, driven by science. And so, inspired by patience, what does that mean? Well, it's integral to what we do. It's one of the reasons I love working for the company, because as a company, it's really part of our DNA that we really care about patients. At the end of the day, it's all about making lives better. The people with these severe diseases that we want to make life better for them, alleviate their suffering. And that makes sense to me because I think people matter.
Mm.
But I think people matter because I think God created them and he loves them and they're created in his image. But actually, if you just reduce people down to biology, chemistry, and physics, they're nothing more than a collection of atoms.
Mm.
You know, you and I are just moist robots.
Mm.
So,
Very good-looking moist robots. Of course. But yes, essentially.
And if we are just robots, then suffering is an illusion. It doesn't exist. It's just one chemical going from there to there. That's all it is.
Yes.
And so it doesn't matter.
Yes.
And so why should I bother going into work each day and try to alleviate that? But of course, all my colleagues that I work with, even the ones who probably are reductionists, they care.
Yeah.
We all care.
Yeah.
Because people so obviously do matter. They so obviously do have value. And so there's an inconsistency there between the kind of reductionist worldview on one side and then actually what it would look like to live that out. Because actually, to live that out, you'd have to do some pretty weird stuff.
Yes.
It wouldn't be nice.
Yeah.
Because you'd essentially have to completely disregard any value of life.
Yes.
And for me, there's an inconsistency there.
Yes.
Whereas there's a huge consistency between there being a creator God who made people in his image and the fact that we care about them and we want to alleviate their suffering. That is a consistency.
Yes. So we've got these two different worldviews. One worldview, this reductionistic thing that says, okay, all your psychology boils down to biology, which boils down to chemistry, which boils down to physics, and nothing but. So that's one worldview. And there are scientists that live within that one worldview. But then there's this other worldview, this Christian worldview, we're made in God's image, and therefore we should expect to be able to understand God's world and the mysteries of the universe and that sort of thing. And scientists also exist within that worldview. But I guess the clash happens up here at the level of worldview.
Exactly. So it's those two worldviews that collide, because you cannot possibly have a reductionist worldview and believe in God. And so that is the clash that happens.
Yeah.
And I think the mistake is that we assume that you have to have a reductionist worldview in order to be a scientist.
Yes.
And of course you don't.
Yes.
I know scientists of all different faiths and none. And it's absolutely not necessary to have a reductionist worldview in order to do good science. There are Nobel Prize winners who are Christians.
Mm.
So it's clearly not a clash between theism on the one hand, belief in a God, and good science.
And there might even be good reasons, if you believe in gods and if you believe that this is God's creation, that might actually drive you into the laboratory to do more science.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the added pleasures as a scientist, I mean, scientists just love finding out stuff, understanding how stuff works, discovering new things. Every time I do an experiment and I draw a graph, I get very excited because I'm the first person ever to see that graph and to have understood that thing that no one in the history of mankind has ever done that before.
Yeah.
And my wife thinks I'm very weird because I get very excited about graphs. But I find that amazing because I love finding out about the universe. But when you add in the fact that I know that this universe is created by a wonderful God, then actually what happens as I do that, I start to see a little bit of God's character in the beauty of that complexity.
Mm.
It's a bit like as you look at the Mona Lisa, you start to see a little bit of the genius of the painter.
Yes.
And it's the same thing. As I study these wonderful mechanisms on a subcellular level that are just fantastic in their complexity and their interrelatedness, I see something of the complexity and beauty of God.
Wonderful. Okay, well, we need to round this bit of the evening off. But we've asked you what you made of Jesus kind of aged 18. But obviously, since 27 and since coming back to a sort of a thoughtful Christianity that has sort of gripped you a lot more. What do you answer to that question now? Who is Jesus to Jamie Henshall today?
Well, I would say the difference now is that that I know Jesus. Mm-hmm. He is my saviour. He's saved me, to be honest. And he is my absolute, my source of absolute truth in life. Of course I find absolute truth in the work that I do in science, but who makes sense of who I am and who God is and who gives me that relationship, which is the foundation to everything, and who is the person that does that? That's Jesus, and he's the person that it's different to knowing about a person and knowing a person, and the difference now I think is that I know Jesus.
Wow. So what advice would you give to people here? So final question, there may be people here who are investigating into Christianity, investigating into Jesus. What advice would you give them as to how to take things further?
I mean, there's lots of ways that you can find out more about Jesus, but probably the best thing you can do is to read the Bible. Mm. Go to a gospel and read that. And that's historical account of Jesus, and that's a great way to get into it. If you have a friend maybe who is a Christian, maybe ask if you could read it with them or chat over it with them. I don't know any Christian who doesn't love to talk about Jesus and chat through it, and that would be a great thing to do. Or like me, come along to church. It's a great place where people can you have it explained to you helpfully, and you can meet with other people and you can investigate this stuff for yourself. I mean, that's what I did, and I was blown away.
That's very good advice. Well, Jamie, you've been really, really helpful in not only fleshing out how Christianity and faith interact with one another, but actually how Jesus interacts with you and makes sense of your life. We're really grateful for you explaining that to us. So should we all show our appreciation for Jamie? Thank you.